This is generally no problem, as the lymphatic system removes the excess, and a little fluid cushioning the organs is a good thing. In PCM, however, the lymphatic system can't keep up with the leakage, and the stomach area begins to bloat with its own waste fluids. Add to this the likelihood of a swollen liver, which is another result of PCM, and you wind up with the terrible irony of a person on the verge of starvation looking weirdly similar to an overeater. This moment of science comes from Indiana University, with production support from the Brabson Foundation. Today's program was prepared by William Oram, with help from Bruce Martin in the Medical Sciences Program. I'm Yael Cassander.
WILL programs are made possible in part by Bevere Cafe, offering breakfast from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. and lunches from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monday through Friday, and catering. Bevere Cafe is student-operated on the second floor of Bevere Hall, corner of Gregory and Goodwin, Urbana.
In sports this afternoon, the top two tennis players in the world were beset by physical difficulties today in the quarterfinals of the Paris Masters. Number one Rafael Nadal retired with a knee injury after losing the first set 6-1 to Nikolai Davydenko just hours after second-ranked Roger Federer pulled out of the tournament shortly before his match against James Blake because of a stiff back. The Chicago Bulls and the defending NBA champion Celtics are both 1-0 heading into tonight's matchup in Boston. The Dallas Stars make a stop at the United Center tonight to take on the Chicago Blackhawks. And the University of Illinois football team entertains Iowa tomorrow. The Illini will be looking for their first win against the Hawkeyes since 2000. That 31-0 victory came at Memorial Stadium. Illinois is 2-3 in Big Ten play. Iowa 2-2. Kickoff is 2:30 tomorrow afternoon. That's sports.
WILL programs are made possible by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra, presenting Halloween Fright Night on Friday, October 31st at 7:30 p.m. in the Great Hall of the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. It's an evening of haunting music and surprises. More information is available at 351-9139.
It's 2:42. One of the most powerful people in Illinois politics during the last few decades has been indicted as part of an ongoing probe of corruption in state government. Bill Cellini of Springfield is accused of attempting to extort money from a firm seeking state business. Sean Crawford reports.
Bill Cellini might not be well known to the casual follower of state politics, but for anyone involved with Illinois government, few, if any, have had more clout. Cellini, a businessman and lobbyist, has made political careers, and he's done well for himself. His operations are stealth-like, far from the view of the media and the public.
One of the hallmarks of this state is that there are a lot of people that no one's ever heard of who really have a great deal of influence, whether it's Mr. Cellini or anybody else.
Paul Green is director of the School of Policy Studies at Roosevelt University in Chicago.
Cellini and others, they're the ones who put the deals together. In some cases, they're needed. They're the only ones that seemingly can work both sides of the aisle.
The U.S. attorney for the northern part of Illinois has issued a 4-count indictment in which the 73-year-old Cellini is accused of trying to shake down a firm wanting to work with the teacher's retirement system. Prosecutors say the Republican Cellini used his influence with the TRS board in an attempt to wrangle from the firm a large campaign donation to a public official, what's commonly referred to as pay-to-play politics. A judge has previously said that official is Democratic Governor Rod Blagojevich. The governor denies knowledge of the alleged scheme, and he's not been charged with any wrongdoing. The legal action comes as little surprise. Cellini's name showed up earlier this year during the trial of convicted fundraiser Tony Rezko. Political observers were on alert after Cellini's recent decision to step down from his post as treasurer of the Sangamon County Republican Party, a position he'd held for 30 years. Bruce Stratton is an attorney for the county organization.
I have no idea whether there's any relationship between the two events, but I can tell you that he's been talking about stepping out of party stuff for a long time.
Cellini is the son of a police officer whose ties to state government go back to the Ogilvie administration and his selection as the first secretary of the Department of Transportation. Along the way, he became a multimillionaire. He got a stake in Illinois' first riverboat casino and received state money to build a hotel that wound up with taxpayers footing the bill. He's been part of the kitchen cabinets of governors throughout the years, and stories abound over his ability to get people government jobs and appointments. Mike Lawrence was a press secretary and advisor to former Governor Jim Edgar. Lawrence says Cellini was a major fundraiser for Republicans and Democrats alike, and that got him access.
I can't remember a time when he didn't have significant influence.
While Cellini's ties are to Springfield, Lawrence says his reach extended throughout the state.
It has certainly been a factor in Chicago. He has been a major player with a lot of politicians in Illinois.
Cellini's attorney says his client is innocent of what's outlined in the indictment. Making the indictment more intriguing is the allegation that surfaced in the Resco trial that Cellini and others tried to end the investigation by getting federal authorities to oust U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald, who brought the charges. Cellini's attorney also denies that claim. I'm Sean Crawford.
Republicans have been hurt by the Bush administration's low approval ratings. Some members of Congress from traditionally conservative districts are having more trouble fending off Democratic challengers. But local incumbent Tim Johnson of the 15th Illinois Congressional District could be one of the safest Republicans up for re-election. AM 580's Whitney Wyckoff has more.
The 15th Congressional District, which goes through 22 counties in east central Illinois, is what Congressional Quarterly calls a safe Republican district. Consistently, incumbent Republican Representative Tim Johnson has been winning comfortably after his first election in 2000. Most recently, in 2006, he beat challenger Democrat David Gill by a 15% margin. That makes it difficult for Democratic challenger Steve Cox to lodge an effective campaign. Cox is new to the district. He moved to Urbana, where his wife grew up, after he retired in 2003. Cox says he didn't expect that he would run for a public office when he moved.
I felt that I needed to step up to the plate and offer myself as a person to personally address the concerns and principles that I believe in and try to see if I could get reconciliation, provide for the people in this district reconciliation with the rest of the world.
While Cox spent his career working as a computer information specialist in the State Department, he has never run for public office. And according to Federal Election Commission reports, Johnson has raised nearly $300,000 for his campaign. Cox has filed no receipts. Cox says that an Obama administration will need legitimate support, support he can provide. But University of Illinois political science professor Brian Gaines says Obama will need pretty long coattails to carry Cox into the House. And those coattails don't seem to extend this far south of Cook County.
He's essentially neglected downstate as a senator, partly because he's been campaigning in the rest of the country. But he's really made very few visits other than going to Springfield to make announcements. So I'm not sure that Obama actually will pile up. He'll do extremely well in university precincts, but across the rest of the district, I don't expect him to be overwhelmingly popular. That'll hold Cox back somewhat.
At the same time, Johnson isn't exactly a party loyalist. In fact, during his last term, he was among the most likely Republicans to vote against the party line. Johnson said at a recent candidate forum that, for a Republican, his voting record is quite favorable to the environment. The League of Conservation Voters ranks Johnson's environmental voting record this year in the top 15 of House Republicans. The League says that this year, Johnson has voted in support of environmental issues 62% of the time.
I've served in a minority, I've served in a majority in the Illinois General Assembly as well as in Congress. And I think I'm able to effectively operate in both a minority and a majority status. I don't think we want to have one-party government in any event, but I'll do my best, and I think I have done a relatively good job of operating from both structures, including the last 2 years as a minority, and the last 6 years before that as a majority. So I think we'll be able to handle this fine.
At that candidate forum, both expressed support for the Farm Bill and for reducing U.S. dependence on foreign oil. Cox chided Johnson for failing to act when it was discovered that Iraq had no weapons of mass destruction and wasn't housing al-Qaeda. Cox said he supports Obama's proposed timetable. Johnson said there is no use looking back at past decisions.
Very few people, if anyone, would say that this situation has been extraordinarily well handled. I wish we had the ability to live our life with a TiVo machine, but we don't. So we have to go on with where we are now.
Johnson says that he favors a timetable set by the military. Originally, when Johnson was elected, he promised to limit his time in Congress, but he defaulted on that promise when he ran for a second term in 2002. While Gaines says you can't always be sure, he thinks it's unlikely that Johnson will lose his seat.
So it's not impossible that this is a district that could surprise us, but I'll be very, very surprised if Tim Johnson loses. I think he isn't someone who's lost touch with the district. He's not an extreme right-winger who seems to be out of step with his constituents. I just don't see any good sign to think he's highly vulnerable.
Gaines says the best shot that Cox has is if students turn out in droves and vote Democratic down the ticket. I'm Whitney Wyckoff, AM 580 News.
If you're a supporter of Senator Barack Obama, what would you give to be at his election night rally in Chicago's Grant Park? Massages, computer help, money, romance? Well, get in line. Tickets to Obama's election night shindig were snapped up in a matter of a few hours Tuesday afternoon. Chicago has now sprouted a small but lively underground economy where tickets to the event are being bartered, swapped, sold, and traded. Ben Calhoun reports.
Just after 2 p.m. on Tuesday, without any warning, an email went out to Obama supporters in Illinois. It said they could sign up for tickets for his election night party in Grant Park on a first-come, first-served basis. By late afternoon, they were all gone, and requests were funneled into a waiting list. Eventually, the waiting list got so long, the campaign cut that off, too.
I was working all day, and I was really too busy to even check my email. So at the end of the day, at about 6 o'clock, I finally checked my email, and I said, oh my God, I've got to go and try to get this ticket.
Ben Hawk is 30 and lives in Chicago, where he works for an ad agency. Hawk says he's been an Obama supporter since 2004.
I saw him at the Democratic National Convention. I was watching it with my parents. And at the end of his speech, all of us were floored.
Hawk says supporting Obama was a political awakening for him. He saw his Republican father vote Democrat for the first time. And Hawk, who'd never contributed money to a campaign, ended up donating money to Obama's presidential run. Several times, actually. As soon as he saw the email about the election night rally, Hawk says he immediately put his name in and crossed his fingers.
Then I got an email back that was just a form email that says, you have been entered into the waiting list. This is not a ticket.
Like hundreds, if not thousands of others, Hawk didn't get tickets to the Obama event. But he quickly realized there was another way. The email to people who got tickets said they would have to bring a picture ID proving they were the person who got the ticket. But the email also said everyone would get to bring a guest. The way Hawk saw it, those guest slots were his chance. He logged onto the classified website, Craigslist.
I posted a wanted posting saying, like, I will pay for tickets to go. And I got three responses back.
One response offered Hawk two tickets. Another warned him that anyone selling two tickets was probably scamming him because the ticket winner's name would have to be on one. The third response was from a ticket holder who offered Hawk his guest spot if Hawk would agree to pay the guy $1,500.
I formulated like six different responses and then I just deleted it.
What were some of the responses?
Oh, expletive, expletive. I don't want to say it on the radio, but I was upset at first, and then I just kind of let it go.
If you search Craigslist right now, you'll find dozens and dozens of listings. As they've multiplied, the ticket seekers have made their pleas more desperate, more inventive. One person offered massages. Another offered a date, saying, quote, maybe it could turn into more than one night with me, you, and Obama. Smiley face. Ha ha. Who knows, right? The ticket holders have responded by making their demands more daring. One suggests White Sox tickets. Another told people, quote, get creative.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, good.
Come on in.
Maggie Sheehan is a 20-year-old junior at DePaul University. Last night, she was cramming for a big biology test and struggling with a harsh reality.
The brain is a very complicated organ.
Like Ben Hawk, Maggie Sheehan says she didn't get the email about tickets until it was too late.
I was in biology lab, so I was there for 2.5 hours. And so didn't get the email for 2.5 hours.
Biology is making life hard these days.
Biology is making life very hard these days.
After getting waitlisted for tickets, Sheehan sat down with her roommate to write a Craigslist ad trying to buy tickets. And just like Ben Hawk, they had to ask themselves, how much is it worth to me?
And I said, well, would you pay 40 if I paid 40? And she said, sure.
The two offered $80 for two guest spots. And so far, they've had no luck.
All right, so if somebody came to you and said, got two spots. We're going to give them to you for $150.
I mean, I'd love to say yes. I would love to do that, but I don't know if it's possible.
Sheehan confessed to me that she's pretty discouraged at this point, adding that she has a secret hope that a certain Chicagoan might hear her on the radio, and that was part of the reason she took time away from studying to talk to me. She even came up with a pitch.
I'll be Maggie the college student instead of Joe the plumber. You know, the average Joe trying to get her way into the election.
But the heart of all the backroom dealings isn't the buyers, really. It's the sellers. The people who got something for free and then realized all of a sudden they had something that thousands of people wanted desperately.
When you have something of value, your natural inclination is to try and get value for it. That's capitalism, right?
Adam, who asked that I not use his last name, is one of the people on Craigslist who's offering up his guest spot. Out of many people contacted, he was the only person who would agree to talk. Adam told me he knows he could get a lot of money for his guest spot, but at least for now, that's not how he's going to pick who gets his second ticket.
It's not about the money at this point. It's about who wants to be there the most and who's willing to be the most creative.
This is like a huge amount of power that you've got.
I know. I was joking to my friend the other night. The way the requests are rolling in, and I said to my friend, you know, this must be what it feels like to be a really hot chick and have people graveling at your feet all the time. At some level, I feel bad because I've got this power, and I don't want to wield it for evil, so to speak. But at the same time, it's kind of fun.
It's kind of like Spider-Man, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, right?
Right, exactly.
Adam admitted that if someone offered him $1,000, he would have a hard time turning it down. But he told me that the leading contender out of the dozen or so offers he's gotten isn't a cash offer. He said he's leaning towards a college student from Ohio who's volunteered for the campaign. In exchange for his ticket, she's offered Adam homemade cookies and free cello lessons. I'm Ben Calhoun.
Earth and Sky.
Friday, October 31st, 2008. As darkness falls tonight and tomorrow, look in the general direction of the sunset to see the slim, waxing crescent moon and blazing planet Venus.
In North America, the moon and Venus will pair up more closely this Friday evening. As seen from Europe, Africa, Asia, and Australia, the moon and Venus will appear closer together at nightfall Saturday.
The moon and Venus can be seen from around the world, except for the far northern latitudes, like Alaska or Scandinavia. At mid-northern latitudes, like those in the U.S. and Europe, you'll still need an unobstructed southwestern horizon to see the moon and Venus, because these worlds lurk low in the sky at nightfall. South of the equator, the moon and Venus stand higher above the horizon.
Next to the sun, the moon and Venus are the two brightest celestial bodies. They should be fairly easy to pick out as